I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. There's a rough section of Philadelphia around Kensington Avenue underneath the L tracks that's known for drugs, violent crime, and prostitution. Two women were choked to death this fall, their partially clothed bodies found in this neighborhood. They were less than a mile from each other, one discovered in a trash-strewn lot, the other in an abandoned building. Both had reportedly been battling drug addiction. These crimes have shed light on the harsh and violent reality of drugs and prostitution in Kensington, our topic for today's Radio Times. And let me introduce our two guests. Jeff Deeney is a social worker and a freelance writer. He works with felony drug offenders in the criminal justice system and also writes about urban poverty and the drug culture for the Daily Beast and Fawker, as well as for Philadelphia City Paper and Philadelphia Weekly. And Jeff Deeney, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
You're very welcome. Mary DeFusco is an attorney with the Defenders Association of Philadelphia. She serves as the Defenders Director of Training and Recruitment and is a representative on the Oversight Committee of the Philadelphia Treatment Court, which she helped to create. She's also a founding board member of Dawn's Place, which serves the needs of trafficked, pimped, and prostituted women, and helped to create the Project Dawn Court, which is hoping to do for victims of commercial sexual exploitation what the treatment court has done for drug addicts. And Mary DeFusco, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
You're very welcome. Jeff, let me begin with you, and I want you to describe for our listeners this section of neighborhood. I have to say, I Googled it, and I actually worked in this neighborhood about 30 years ago, but describe it for our listeners.
Yeah, Kensington Avenue is what is called the stroll on the streets. It's the hub of street prostitution activity in Philadelphia. It stretches from about Kensington and Huntington up to about Kensington and Tioga. And that entire stretch of Kensington Avenue during the day is sort of like low-end commerce center, used appliances, used furniture, Chinese takeout, adult books, that kind of thing. And then at night, all of that is shuttered, and that whole expanse of the avenue is trafficked by a lot of drug addicts, a lot of prostitutes, a lot of drug trade.
And you have been there. I know from reading some of your stories, you've talked to a lot of the people on the avenue. I mean, at nighttime, is it busy with prostitutes and drug addicts?
Typically, it is very, very busy with prostitutes and drug addicts, especially right underneath the Kensington and Somerset L stop. There is sort of like the hub of the stroll, where pretty much 24/7, it's kind of a beehive of, you know, drug activity, people buying and selling drugs, people buying and selling, needles, women who are prostituting there, meeting tricks. I've worked on Kensington Avenue as a social worker, so I've spent a lot of time in that neighborhood professionally. So when the story about the stranglings
about the two women
who were murdered there, you know, that was something that I knew immediately, I could write about that for the Daily Beast, because there's a lot of knowledge that I have to sort of immediately accessible about that neighborhood. I kind of knew what I was going to see when I got up there.
And what do we know about what happened to these women?
Well, what we know is that they were both struggling with drug addiction. They were both found in abandoned lots. They were both approached by a man on foot, which the girls who work the avenue call a walking date. The women that I talked to probably between 10 and 15 women over the last week and a half, and they almost unanimously report that this walking date is a very risky endeavor. They know that. When a man approaches them in a vehicle, the woman can kind of set the terms a little more. She can tell him, this is a place that I like to go, where I'm comfortable, where she knows that if she needs to get out, there's doors she can bang on. If she screams, she's going to be heard. On a walking date.
And by that you mean someone that literally is walking up the street and approaches
foot.
A prostitute.
Yeah, and typically a local, so somebody who doesn't have to drive. And they just kind of walk down to the avenue, approach the girl on the avenue, and then, you know, say, let's go to one of these, these lots, these locations that are known. All the girls know where these lots are. They're very common sort of working spaces. you know, and there's, you know, you'll go, so you go to the lot and, you know, the weeds are sort of like, you know, head high, but you can see there's a path cut through them. And if you follow the path, you start to see, you know, dirty needles on the ground, discarded clothing, and you sort of follow the path back, and ultimately you come to, there's sort of like this dirty mattress right in the mud, and this is, you know, where women would walk to work, and so that's pretty much the deal.
And you have talked to a number of prostitutes that knew these two women, so were these women prostitutes?
That's what the women say. Nicole Piacentini, the older of the two, was definitely, you know, she was a veteran. She was, you know, an avid, you know, they call, they, you know,
she
they,
was known there.
The women say she was old head. Basically, when I went up there the first time, I only had a picture of Elaine Goldberg, the younger of the two women. They hadn't released a picture of Nicole Piacentini yet. Most of the women didn't know Elaine. I would assume that she was a little, she was young, so she was a little newer to the whole scene. Nicole, everybody knew Nicole, didn't even need to see a picture. Everybody knew exactly what had happened to her. Everybody was sort of mourning her loss. She was known.
And as you say, these two women's bodies were found, I believe, one in a trash strewn lot, as you described, mm-hmm. one near an abandoned building. And we're talking about an area, as you describe, a Dantean wilderness.
Yeah, it's pretty bleak.
Hell,
and as a matter of fact, I've had some correspondence from people who read the story, you know, are saying, it has to be overblown, that this is overdramatized. The story did well enough that the Daily Beast decided to send a video crew down last weekend. So we were back out there doing sort of a short documentary follow-up to this that'll run either later this week or early next week on the Daily Beast. So, you know, people can see this for themselves. We went back to both sites. As a matter of fact, both of those sites where the women were murdered are both literally a block off of the Stroll. So, you know, they are places that would be convenient to walk to from the avenue where the girls work. But then in the video, you'll see there's this other place that, you know, a friend of mine that was guiding me through this, who's very familiar with the avenue, we went up and looked at some of the murder sites, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. And he was
crazy.
Just,
why?
Because of the conditions, it's just, I mean, it's bleak, man. I mean, it's like, you know, a dirty mattress in the mud surrounded by dirty needles and, you know, used condoms, that kind of thing. I mean, it's harsh. And he was kind of like, this is nothing. Like, I'll show you this place called the Tracks, this area where C Street intersects with Lehigh Avenue. There's like a cargo freight line there where the addicts have just pushed the gates down. And I mean, there's literally like a mile's expanse of this kind of terrain, just paths strewn with dirty needles and, you know, mattresses just sort of in the weeds where women work. And, if you're not buying it, you know, wait till you see the video and you'll see it's pretty bad.
Mary, let me get you into the conversation. I have to say, as Jeff was talking, you were not nodding your head in a knowing kind of way. And I think for a number of people, if they've never been to this part of Philadelphia, this is a revelation.
Well, it's not just that part of Philadelphia, Marty. I mean, to me, this is not a surprise. I mean, back in 1985, the Canadian government put together a committee on the issue of prostitution and pornography. And that committee concluded that girls and women in prostitution have a 40% higher mortality rate than the national average. So, you know, this is not pretty women. This is not what Hollywood shows us. This is the reality. And the reality is that these women's lives are being destroyed. This is not a victimless crime, but we've been running around arresting victims. And that's why we can't seem to get a handle on it.
Well, and this is not going to work on the radio, but you showed me, and I'm holding in my hand here, something called Portrait of Exploitation, the Real Face of Prostitution. Yeah. These are our little photographs of about six or seven women, and then over time, we see them before they became prostitutes, and then we see them at the tail end. They're about seven or eight photos, and it is a harsh and horrifying picture of someone essentially falling apart.
It is. It is a harsh and horrifying photo. everywhere I go, I bring those photos, because no matter what I say, nothing can portray the reality of prostitution like those photographs. Those are a series of mugshots. There's eight of all of the women taken within a two-year period. And the women, as you can see, are like disintegrating. In the very first photos, you can see they're beautiful women. Their eyes are clear. They don't appear to have a drug or alcohol addiction. There doesn't appear to be anything wrong with them in any way. Some of them look like they could be on the high school Girl Scout teams or whatever.
Cheerleaders or something.
And then by the end of the photo, they look like they've been through a war zone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrifying.
And it's hard to speak in generalities here, but why does, and I'm just looking at these photos, why does someone turn to prostitution?
Well, I think, and that's a really good question, because I think a lot of times what has happened in the past is that, certainly in criminal justice, we've looked at this problem as being a side effect of drug and alcohol addiction. The theory being, well, the woman picked up a drug or alcohol addiction, then she needed money, so she went out and sold herself to make the money to pay for the drugs. But in fact, studies have shown that that's not really what happens. In fact, statistically, what you'll find is the average age of entry into drug and alcohol in this country is 13 to 15.
13 to 15.
And that's drug and alcohol. The average age of entry into prostitution is 12 to 14. So it's even worse. So what you see, and we've actually saw it in the Project Oncourt, our very first woman through came up and said to the judge, "Judge, I went to high school," and she named a very nice high school out in the suburbs. She said, "I was in Reading Olympics. I tutored kids in reading, you know." And she said, "And my very first boyfriend pimped me out." And then she said, "I got addicted to the money." This woman didn't have a drug or alcohol problem. And we studied it, and what we've seen is what they term addicted to the money turns out to be addicted to the idea that I have some worth, that if somebody is willing to pay me $20, then I'm not useless. So there's almost an addiction to feel like I'm not just being used, I can get something out of this. And then the pain of that lifestyle drives the drug and alcohol, and then it becomes a vicious cycle, and you can't tell anymore, chicken or the egg.
And hold on, just only because we're up on a break here, but Mary, are you also saying when you look at the childhoods or even the family life of these women who become prostitutes, and we're almost up on a break here, that you see sexual violence, abuse?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You see sexual abuse and homelessness.
And homelessness on top of that.
Yeah. So social workers see it in case files over and over and over again. I mean, I've worked with women that are coming directly off the avenue. So, I mean, I have access to that information, biopsychosocial, reports that are very detailed sort of life summaries. And, yeah, the sexual violence, domestic violence and the early childhood sexual abuse is, I don't want to say it's universal, but it's
very, very common.
Yeah. Very, very common.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation talking about a tough but important subject. And this is prostitution, drugs, and violence. Jeff Deeney is a social worker, freelance writer, Mary DeFusco, an attorney with the Defenders Association of Philadelphia. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, This Is the Week That Is, 1812's annual political comedy. Starring Philadelphia's own Tony Braithwaite, Scott Greer, and others, This Is the Week That Is brings you the latest news on everything from healthcare and the economy to dog curbing in South Philadelphia, featuring a script that changes with the headlines. Tickets for This Is the Week That Is at 215-592-9560 or 1812productions.org.
Celebrate the Jewish Festival of Lights with Leonard Nimoy and the Western Wind. Join us for a delightful and moving hour of songs sung by the Western Wind and holiday stories told by the inimitable Mr. Spock of Star Trek fame. It's Leonard Nimoy and the Western Wind in Hanukkah and Story and Song from PRI.
Thursday night at 10 on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from Westown School. Westown, a Quaker school near Westchester, Pennsylvania, offers innovative curricula, including Singapore math and advanced courses beyond AP. Westown's program teaches the mind to think and the conscience to act. Parents who want both academic and character development in their child's education can learn more by attending Westown School's pre-K through 12th grade open house Sunday, December 12th at 1:30 p.m. Details are available at westtown.edu.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Two women were strangled to death this fall in the Kensington section of Philadelphia in an area known for prostitution and drugs. The killer is still at large, and this violent crime has shed a light on the harsh reality of the sexual exploitation of women, the commercial sex trade underneath the L-tracks. Jeff Deeney has been writing about this for the Daily Beast, for Falker, also for he's also written for Philadelphia City Paper and Philadelphia Weekly. Mary DeFusco is an attorney with the Defenders Association of Philadelphia. She's a founding board member of Dawn's Place, which serves the needs of trafficked, pimped, and prostituted women, and has helped to create Project Dawn Court, which hopes to do for victims of commercial sexual exploitation what the treatment court has done for drug addicts. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Jeff, as a social worker, I want you to help our listeners understand why someone, let's say, that has been abused, sexually exploited, as, let's say, a kid growing up, then turns to prostitution. Because I think on the face of it, that makes no sense. You'd think you would run from that kind of relationship. What is the draw?
Well, most of the women that I've talked to have told me that there was a man, you know, somewhere in their history that was a point of entry to this, you know, a boyfriend, you know, who was abusing them. I actually got correspondence after the story ran from, you know, a mother over in Jersey who, you know, was reaching out saying that, you know, her daughter was missing, that she thought she went back to Kensington to be with this, you know, abusive ex-boyfriend of hers, that, you know, when she's with this guy, she gets caught up back in the drug life. And that is, you know, it's something that we see over and over with the women that we work with, that I've heard from the women that I talk to for the story, is that they just can't stay away from Kensington. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, the whole lifestyle just is really hard to break out of once you're set in that cycle. I mean, you know, the women cite the, you know, they say it's exciting, which, you know, because it's very chaotic, you know, the risk of arrest, copping drugs, you know, the fast money, all of this stuff is, you know, is this very, you know, chaotic and, you know, very fast paced kind of life that, when you get out of that and you're placed in a treatment setting, it's like suddenly the music stops and, you know, these women are left with thinking about all these things that they've done, and that's, you know, what they tell us that, you know, they struggle with.
Well, you also have written about the kind of sisterhood, I guess, that these women, what, look out for each other, warn each other?
I mean,
they're also in competition with each other.
They do the best that they can, I think. The way it works on the Avenue is that it's not a pimp system. The women there are all sort of out there on their own. You know, in one sense, that may make them more vulnerable to violence on the streets because they have no protection in the form of pimps. I mean, I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other. I think women who do have pimps are subjected to the same kind of violence by their pimps. But yeah, they will tell you that, you know, they will look out for each other, and that, you know, if one woman gets in a car to go on a date, one, you know, another woman will try to take the license plate down, right, just in case she doesn't come back. That if somebody goes on a bad date where they go out with a guy who, you know, beat on them, they'll come back to the Avenue, walk up and down the Avenue, try to let everybody know that, you know, to put out this bad date alert. You know, I think they do the best they can, but the cards are kind of stacked against them because the women tell me that, you know, a real major problem is that, you know, the police department simply does not take reports of sexual violence against prostitutes very seriously.
They see that as sort of just a price of doing this kind of business?
They say that when they make these reports, cops tell them, you know, you don't want to get raped, don't trick on the Avenue. Mm. You know, or if they start to give a, you know, or, you know, assault report, and it comes out some, at some point during making the report that the woman was prostituting, that the cops will just be like, you know what, just keep walking. You know what I mean? We're not going to waste our time with this. And I think that this has been going on for a long time, not just in Philadelphia. I mean, this is not like a story that is unique to Philadelphia in any way at all. I think this is sort of a national narrative that just reoccurs, that, you know, we've set up this system where, you know, prostitution and drugs are criminalized. Therefore, all of that moves into the shadows in this sort of shadow world. There's really not much recourse to law or justice. And, you know, it telegraphs this message that it's okay to rape and be prostitutes.
Well, Mary, let me get you again back in the conversation. And so, and focusing on Philadelphia then, how do the courts deal with women who have been picked up on the avenue?
Well, again, if you're charged with prostitution, it's the lowest level crime. I mean, it's a misdemeanor of the third degree, at least the first time you do it. And the courts are not trying. I don't think there's anybody who wants to see these women in jail. They simply want them to change their behavior. They want them to stop. But what happens is, because of the stigma involved in the charge, which is all out of proportion to the level of severity of the crime, these women have the highest failure to appear in court in the rate in the system. They have the highest failure to appear on probation rate. They drop out of drug and alcohol treatment at an unprecedented rate. And as a result, they wind up doing a significant amount of their maximum sentences in jail, even though the sentences are not long. So the courts are starting to look at, because of the advent of problem-solving courts like drug courts and treatment courts, you know, what can we do to effectively change behavior? And that seems to be to meet the needs of these women where they are. And I'm very interested in what Jeff said in terms of the fact that these women that he's dealing with don't have pimps. But keep in mind that although the woman that you might see on the street who's not that good looking at this point, I mean, you look at the photos of these women, she's down the line. She's not at her first or second or third arrest. It may well be that the first and second and third arrest, she was pimped into that. Mm-hmm. And once they're pimped into that lifestyle, it is very difficult for them to get out. As a matter of fact, a study was done over five countries, and what they reported was, it was a study of 475 people. The five countries included the USA. 92% of the people interviewed stated that they wanted to escape prostitution immediately. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have to escape something if you're there voluntarily. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty clear, excuse me, that even though they may not have pimps at this point, that the role of the pimp is crucial a lot of times in getting them into it. And a lot of times in our system, it's almost as though the pimp's invisible. Unless he's a foreign trafficker, unless he crosses at least state lines, if not international borders, he's invisible. Mm-hmm. Somebody pimps a woman from Korea, you know, everybody gets involved and gets all concerned, and rightly so. But if they pimp somebody from Kensington, there's not all that concern anymore.
Let me ask you about the customers or the Johns. I mean, what's the rate of arrest for the people that are using these prostitutes?
Well, oddly enough, you don't see a lot of arrests for Johns. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen a case where a John was arrested in the car with the woman. The woman gets arrested and the John is let out. I saw a case where the John was called as a victim. He was called to testify against her as a victim. I couldn't believe it. It's horrifying. But you do see decoy cases where they have female police officers out there and they may make some John arrests. Not a lot, but they do that.
Jeff, I know you want to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple things. You know, first of all, the thing about having a pimp, you know, I think there's this sort of stereotypical idea of, like, you know, the pimp from the 70s with the suit and the hat and everything, which is, you know, there's a gray area as far as, you know, a woman's boyfriend, quote unquote, in the role that he plays. A lot of women are out on the avenue with their boyfriends. Is also very
common.
Can you
see the boyfriend?
Oh, yeah, they stand right on the corner while the girl gets in the car.
Yep.
They'll also go and take the plate down. They'll make their presence asserted so that the guy who's picking them up knows that somebody's with them. And then when the girl comes back, I mean, they split that money because they're both they're both dope addicts and they're both trying to get a bag. So, when the woman comes back, they're splitting that money. So it's like, is that a pimp? It's a complicated relationship, whatever it is.
It is a pimp if what he's saying is, hey, babe, you need to do this, or there are consequences. Now, the consequences may be that he's going to beat her. The consequences may be that he's going to leave her. I mean, it's a combination. I like to think of it as domestic violence, where it's a combination of violence and affection at the same time. So these women get tied into these destructive relationships. And when you see a man who has, like, more than one of these, then you're seeing somebody who is intentionally a pimp. Some men, I think, get caught up into it without necessarily intending to be pimps, but it works out that same way. If there are consequences for refusing to do what this guy wants you to do, he's a pimp.
Well, and are we talking also about two people that are hooked on drugs, and that's part of the dependency?
Which is why I think the woman in that case would not identify herself as having a pimp. The women tell us, no, I don't have a pimp, because in Philly, like, if you have a pimp, what a pimp does, like, the services, I guess, a pimp provides is that he's typically not on drugs, and one thing that he does is he has a supply of heroin and cocaine that he keeps around so that the women, when they wake up, like, they get their wake-up shot, he provides them protection out on the street, you know what I mean? So there is a formal kind of relationship there. That's what the women recognize as having a pimp.
That's right.
And Jeff, when we talk about drugs, are we talking heroin, cocaine, a mix of drugs?
We are. Let me just sort of back out and give you sort of like the bigger picture of the neighborhood. So Kensington Avenue is the eastern boundary of what is been called for years the Badlands. And the Badlands is, the Latin Barrio in North Philly. It's been the hub of Philadelphia's heroin trade for time out of mind. Now, the Badlands is sort of like this complicated network of very narrow streets. It's very dangerous. It's the most violent neighborhood in the city year over year over year. So Kensington Avenue provides a place for people who are not willing to venture into that very, very dangerous network of streets on foot. A lot of the drug traffic does flow down, and it's a known place where people from South Philly, from the greater Northeast, can come on the train.
I was going to say
on
the L.
Yeah, they can access it on public trans, and the Somerset stop is it's legendary. It's like that's the stop where you go, you run down to the bottom of the stairs, you cop your dope, you run right back up, hop on the next train out, and you'll see if you go up there that there's SEPTA police circling around all night long, and it's like this whole cat and mouse kind of game night after night after night of people coming into the neighborhood to cop drugs and get out. And so the stroll gives women this sort of place that's near enough to the Badlands where they can get their dope, but they're not involved in the Badlands corner violence, which, kind of erupts at any given moment. So it is a little bit of a safer location in proximity to the hub of the drug world, but it's not, they're entwined, but they're not necessarily crossing over there.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. We are talking today on Radio Times about the fact that two women were killed in the Kensington neighborhood of Philadelphia recently, and these two murders have raised a whole host of questions and frankly concerns about prostitution and drug addiction and violence in this part of Philadelphia. Jeff Dini has been writing about this area of Kensington for a number of publications, including the Daily Beast, Walker, Philadelphia City Paper, and Philadelphia Weekly. Mary DeFesco is an attorney with the Defenders Association of Philadelphia, involved with Dawn's Place and Project Dawn Court, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Jane from Feasterville to join us on Radio Times. And Jane, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was into prostitution many years ago when I was 18. It was at Fort Dix. And I just want to say that I am really glad that you're... I'm upset. I don't talk about this in public.
I understand.
Bringing the truth to light, because so many guys just think this is no big deal, And I've had men say to me, I can't really quote them.
Yeah.
But you're the first that I can this side to my wife. And I'm supposed to think that's a compliment.
Mm.
And I hope you can just blow lie that they're telling themselves right out the window, because I don't appreciate it.
Well, Jane, first of all, I appreciate the fact that you're calling into Radio Times, and we also understand how difficult it is to talk about this, but I'm looking at the computer here. So you got out around the age of 30, is that right?
It's been 30 years.
It's been 30 years.
I may have been 17 to 19. It's can't quite quote what was happening. What got me out was that I knew I was going to be addicted to heroin pretty much, you know, very shortly. So it was then or never.
So then, and were you able to get off of heroin and get out by yourself?
I was. It was hard. And what really helped me, oddly enough, was I left my boyfriend, and he got addicted to heroin, and so he just didn't bother calling me anymore. So that was lucky.
But
I knew I got out just, you know, at the right time.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, and I want to give Mary DeFusco a chance just to respond, because I know you've worked with women, and Dawn's Place works with women probably like Jane, wanting to get out of the sex trade.
Yes, that's true. Dawn's Place is a program that deals with both foreign traffic and domestically pimped and prostituted women. And yes, the what she's talking about is very common, that there's a situation where men feel like, well, this is not a big deal. This is a victimless crime. This is a woman who's trying to make a living, and I'm helping her out by basically being her customer. And that's just not the case. That is just not the case. When a man goes off to see a prostitute, he does not know if he's given her $20, how much of that 20 she actually gets to keep. I mean, one of the things that I've read that I think is really a really great way to capsulize this is you're saying, yeah, you know, if you're giving this woman $20, you're giving her $2, and you're giving the pimp $18 to beat her into the position where she's smiling and acting like she wants to have sex with you. And I find it interesting that we can see this when women come from other countries and say, you know, I was 14 years old, and I would run up to the American soldiers and I would say, oh, I want to have sex with you, because I had to do that, because if I didn't, I'd be beaten if I didn't make so much money by the end of the night. And we understand that, and we realize that it's sexual slavery and it's a horrible thing. But if we put it in an American street or on the internet here in America, we don't see that anymore. And to me, that just doesn't make sense.
And Jeff, I'm just curious, because Mary mentioned $20. I mean, what kind of money can a prostitute make on Kensington Avenue?
As a matter of fact, we did ask, just to clarify that. And they say that, you know, they'll start at 60 for full service, I guess, you know, 40 for oral, I guess I would say. And then there's negotiations, and depending on how desperate the girl is, how, you know, if you run into one of these girls and they're dope sick,
at these photos again.
You know, basically every heroin addict, you know, wakes up every morning in withdrawal. I mean, you sleep your last high off and you wake up sick. And that's a pretty desperate moment if you don't have any money in your pocket. I mean, you're going to do what you need to do to get some money in your pocket, because it just feels horrible being dope sick. And so, yeah, you know, the girls, when they go out early in the night, if they're sick, and, you know, and a guy sees that, like, because a lot of the Johns, they, you know, they know what that is. They know what dope sick looks like. And, you know, and I know that's crazy, but yeah, there are guys that definitely will pick up a girl. They'll see she's dope sick, and, you know, she'll ask for 60. They'll tell her, look, 10 or nothing. That's, you know, right. Was told.
And
that
by
on
dope
Saturday
sick,
night.
They looked so high on drugs.
No, actually, at that point, that you would see their nose running, eyes watering, actually sick in withdrawal. Yeah, but if one thing that Jane said, I also think was very important, was that she mentioned that she was in it briefly and was able to get out before it became a chronic issue. And I think it's important to highlight that that's the idea behind, you know, these new intervention initiatives with women, is, you know, and across the criminal justice spectrum, is this idea of, you know, early offenders, you know, treating them instead of incarcerating them before they start that cycle.
Let's take a very short break, and then we're going to get back to our conversation. We are talking about prostitution, violent crime, and drugs in the Kensington section of Philadelphia with Jeff Deeney and Mary DeFusco. And Jane, thank you so much for calling into Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499.
The Division of Continuing Studies at the University of the Arts supports WHYY. With over 70 classes and workshops for adults, Continuing Studies also offers 8 certificate programs for working creative professionals and teaching artists. Certificate programs include web design, web development, digital media, and more. Registration is now available at cs.uarts.edu for spring 2011 courses beginning January 24th. Continuing Studies at the University of the Arts. Power up your creative career.
I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. India has the most road fatalities in the world. We'll look at why India's roads are so deadly. Also, a fresh look at George Washington through the maps he drew and collected during his life. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
JerseyArts.com supports WHYY, featuring information on Grounds for Sculpture, located in the heart of central New Jersey, offering hundreds of outdoor contemporary sculptures year-round on 35 landscaped park acres, with gallery exhibits, fine dining, concerts, classes, and more. Directions and a calendar of fall and holiday events are available at groundsforsculpture.org. Grounds for Sculpture and more online at JerseyArts.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Mary DeFesco. She's a public defender here in Philadelphia, involved with a place called Dawn's Place and Project Dawn Court, helping victims of commercial sexual exploitation. Jeff Deeney has been writing about prostitution and a violent and dangerous part of Philadelphia, and his work has appeared in the Daily Beast and a number of other publications. He's also a social worker. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get another caller, and this is Annette from Fraser Township to join us. Annette, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. I would like to report that my niece was found dead on a side street in Kensington on Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Really?
She had told her roommate that she was going down to Dunkin' Donuts in the morning, and her father received a phone call from the medical examiner about 8 that evening, asking him to come down and identify her body. My niece had been in a drug rehabilitation center in Florida, and she had come up to stay with a friend since she and her husband have been separated for a number of years. But what concerns me is the lack of information from the police.
And then, first of all, I mean, we're all just sitting here just in shell shock, frankly, because of what happened to your niece. And I do want to give Jeff Deeney, obviously we don't know what happened, but give him a chance to respond to your concerns.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, that that kind of news always breaks my heart. I mean, I always feel like, you know, if I had a chance to meet this woman, that maybe there would be some intervention that could have helped. But yeah, I was up there again this past weekend. The Daily Beast sent their video, editor down to shoot a little documentary follow up, as I mentioned earlier. And the police presence there now is just crazy. I mean, you can just sit parked on the avenue and just watch one car after the next getting pulled over. We were at the murder site of Nicole Piacentini. Where there was, and the family set up a nice little memorial there, and we wanted to sort of get that on camera, and we were filming there, and as we were filming, this pickup truck sort of roared up, and these four dudes jumped out and were wondering what we were doing, and they were Vice Squad guys that were saying that they told us they've taken about 40 Johns off the street in the past week. Now at the same time, when I was up there the first time for the Daily Beast story, I had with me the composite sketch of the strangler that had come out the day before. None of the girls had seen it at that point. That was new information to them. By the following day, though, in going back up there, the picture was plastered everywhere. So, I mean, the response, I think, was fairly fast in terms of, getting the information out there about the strangler. But at the same time, I think a lot of the women report that, having, a serial killer on the loose is, only moderately worse than it is on any other day. So,
well, and Annette, and I obviously you and your family need information. And let me see if Mary DeFusco can in any way respond to that. And I'm assuming, I mean, if someone is found dead, frankly, I mean, the police are going to be involved or are involved.
Yes, I would hope so. I'm just so sorry to hear this, but this is, This is very, very sad. It was one of the reasons that I was so eager to get involved in this new court, is that one of my clients, who I was trying to get into Don's place, I had put in three clients initially, and I was delaying to send the file to the prosecutor. When I wanted to go up to the prison to see her, the prison social worker told me she was dead. She had gotten out, and 4 days later, she was dead. And I was horrified. I was horrified. This wasn't, you know, a client who was facing the death penalty. So, you know, we public defenders always have, you know, problems like that and issues like that. But this was a client charged with the lowest level of offense. Nobody wanted her to die. Nobody even wanted her to be incarcerated. But this is what happens to these women. I mean, the mortality rate is ungodly. It's horrifying. And it's just as Jeff just said, kind of like another day. Well, it's a little bit worse than it usually is. Not that much. I mean, that is just absolutely horrifying.
Annette, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And obviously, our hearts go out to you and your family. And if I can go back to you, Mary DeFusco, and just talk about then this Project Dawn Court. I mean, the idea is to intervene, is to see this as a problem and not a crime?
No, it's still a crime. I mean, let's face it, there's crimes that are brought to our courts. The municipal court is the forefront. I mean, we've got judges dealing with all types of levels of misdemeanors. And we have judges who are working hard to find solutions, to try to find a way to change behavior, because, you know, the former method of, well, we're just going to get tough and lock everybody up didn't work. I mean, people still suffered from crimes. And so people, they just don't want crime in their neighborhood, and everybody understands that. The courts understand that. The prosecutor understands it. So what we're trying to do is change behavior by meeting the needs of the women. And because when we do that with drug and alcohol, it works. So why not assume that it'll work with prostitution, meet their specific needs, not just their drug and alcohol needs, but also address the needs caused by commercial sexual exploitation?
Well, I'm assuming we're talking therapy, we're talking GED, yes. We're talking job training. I mean, yes. Really an extensive long list of needs that these women have.
Mostly therapy,
yes. Just to deal with the trauma of
just
their lives.
Just to deal with the underlying trauma.
There's actually a new program model. It's called Trauma Recovery Empowerment Model. It's called TREM, which is specifically designed to meet the needs of this kind of offender. I mean, it's based on, you know, empowering women, teaching them how to set healthy boundaries, you know, cognitive behavioral approaches to changing behaviors. You know, this is an evidence-based model. I mean, this is kind of like the way forward. And there's a number of programs around the city that do utilize this model in women-focused kind of environment. So that's the thing, is that we have programs that work. I mean, we know now how to treat women who have suffered sexual violence.
But the idea is to have enough places, I guess, and get these women to these places and then help them. I mean, it may work, but we also know the recidivism rate is also potentially high.
That's right. It is a very high recidivism rate. We're dealing with a population that, although they're the lowest level of dangerousness to others, to themselves, they are the highest level of harm. So their recidivism rate is very, very high. We're aware of that, and we're dealing with that. So this is not going to be the type of problem-solving court that has the lowest recidivism level, but it will deal with and substantially, we hope, lower the regular recidivism level that occurs now when there's no real treatment for prostitution-related issues.
Is it also a kind of tough love approach? I mean, which is to hold people accountable, but give them a second or perhaps third chance?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, the woman has to appear in front of the judge every month, whether she's doing well or whether she's doing poorly. If she does well, she gets a reward. If she does poorly, she gets a sanction. So it's a combination carrot and the stick. It's worked very well with drug courts. It's very, very well in the Philadelphia Treatment Court, and we're trying to do that here in a new area.
Yeah. Very quickly, because I want to get to Bob from...
Yeah, I think we will see recidivism rates drop, because, I mean, the point is that, you know, we've been repeatedly incarcerating people, repeatedly exposing them to the same kind of outcomes, and, you know, the the problem-solving court, attempts to approach the early offender, the offender with early contact in the system, to steer them into these interventions early in this cycle, to stop it from forming and hardening. And I think that that's the most crucial thing.
Let me get to Bob from Chinkintown to join us. And Bob, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. What I wanted to say was I think the underlying problem here is the abject poverty that's in Kensington, that's present there. I have volunteered for over 15 years at the St. Francis Inn, which is a soup kitchen in Kensington that has a bunch of different ministries, including a women's center. But I think that within literally eyesight of the Liberty Bell, you have third world type poverty where people are coming up during the summer with a shopping cart full of empty milk cartons to get filled up with water because they don't have running water in their house. And I think that if people saw this abject poverty, or experienced it and talked to the folks one-on-one, they would be much more likely to try to do something about it. And I think that that is probably one of the basis of all of this other stuff that comes out of it.
Well, Bob, I appreciate your call to Radio Times, and I'm seeing kind of knowing glances on our guest's face. Jeff Deeney, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, been there, been out and all that. I mean, as a social worker, I mean, I've been in all the housing projects. I've been in crack houses. I've worked on, extremely blighted blocks of this city, and that has always been my mission. That's why I started writing in the first place, being out in these neighborhoods in the community and seeing all this stuff and just being like, wow, like,
how can this be?
And not really feeling like that's being communicated in a forcefully enough way. And, that's always been my mission, is to sort of, show people that Philadelphia is still very deeply segregated. It's still deeply divided in terms of class. Resources that are available to certain communities are vastly different than what's available to others. And I think that, I think a lot of people would be shocked if they actually, were doing the kind of intensive community-based work in the Badlands that I was doing back in 2007. I mean, we were, social workers, we were getting caught in, the middle of, like, drug corner crossfire back in 2007. It was crazy.
Bob, thanks for the call. Let me get Brittany from Lancaster to join us on Radio Times. And Brittany, go ahead. You're on the air. Is that right, Brittany?
When I was growing up, I grew up in Jersey. And my parents had gotten pretty heavily involved in drugs. And later on, I found that my mother was actually involved with prostitution. But as a child, at around age 10 or so, I would go in the car with them to that general vicinity. And at one point, we'd walk down a certain alley, and we had gone a couple times. And I had no idea what was going on at the given time. But at one point, we were held up, and our jackets were taken, and this was taken, and that was taken. And, looking back, I didn't understand the severity of that. My general question is just, is there a lot of issue with children in that general vicinity?
Wow.
And if so, what happens?
Well, and Brittany, I'm assuming you were talking about this area of Philadelphia along Kensington Avenue. That's where your parents went?
Yeah.
And how old were you?
Between 9, 10, around that age.
So you were there just because they wanted to, they didn't have a babysitter, so to speak?
Essentially, yeah. And it was just kind of like, oh, we have to go pick something up. So, I was just like, okay. I had a sense of what was going on to an extent, but it was that kind of, you don't want to believe your parents are doing anything wrong.
Of course, of course. Well, Brittany, I appreciate the call. I'm looking at you, Mary DeFusco.
Well, a lot of these women have children. A lot of the children have been taken away from. A lot of children are living with relatives. One of the big motivators for the women to try to get out of the life sometimes is when they get pregnant or to get a small child. And we have seen that as a turnaround factor a lot of times in their lives. And that is where they make that first impetus and they continue to go to treatment. And even though it's hard, they continue to go over and over again. So a lot of times children can be a turnaround factor for these women, but it is a definite concern because of, you know, things like Brittany just experienced where children are being exposed to things that you certainly don't want them exposed to. And many of our women were exposed to those things as children. And, and some of our women, I think, were actually pimped out as children by their own parents, which is really, it's not as unusual as it may sound, and it's horrifying.
Jeff, I'm looking at the clock here, but I also had read that you had tried to get three prostitutes off of Kensington Avenue.
Oh, well, that was something I wrote in this editorial that just to sort of demonstrate that I have worked with this population before. Yeah, you know, I've worked with women coming off the avenue before. You know, of the three of them, one of them did eventually relapse on crack and kind of disappeared, but the other two are doing very well, and they continue to recover. And children for one of them was a big motivator. Child welfare involvement in Kensington is, you know, extraordinarily high compared to other parts of the city. A lot of the women that I talked to on the avenue for the story, you know, say that, you know, they've got two kids at home while they're out here doing this. And, you know, it's tough. It's complicated. Their pain is legitimate. You know, you can see that they're really torn up by the fact that they're doing this. But at the same time, they'll tell you, like, you know, here I am out on the avenue.
And we're almost out of time here, Mary. And actually, we had a caller, but we don't have time to take the call, having to do with, you know, what if we legalize prostitution? And we could do a whole hour on that. But I'd just be curious, would that in any way address what we've been talking about?
I don't think that it would. And the reason I don't think that it would is you're talking about exploitation here. And the fact that you legalize it doesn't make it any better. I'm kind of abolitionist in that belief. And that's been the experience in Sweden. I mean, in the 80s, they legalized it with the idea that the women, you know, would be able to register for Social Security. Less than 10% ever took advantage of it. Then they discovered that children were being trafficked in and women were being forced in. And so finally, 10 years ago, they changed it where, yes, it's still legal to sell sex, but it's illegal to buy it. And they made vast inroads in reducing prostitution. Gee, what a surprise.
Interesting. Well, much more to talk about. I appreciate both of you joining us today on Radio Times. Certainly appreciate the work that you do as well. Talking today on Radio Times with Jeff Deeney. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Marty.
You're welcome. And also Mary DeFusco.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Jeff Deeney is a social worker and he's a freelance writer. He has been writing about urban poverty, drug culture, and prostitution. In fact, his work has appeared on the Daily Beast, Fawker, as well as Philadelphia City Paper and Philadelphia Weekly. Mary DeFusco is a public defender here in Philadelphia, involved with Dawn's Place and Project Dawn Court. We appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times as well. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about the program. I'm Marty Moscowen. You are listening to WHYY FM Philadelphia and WHYY.org. Member supported public media.